Weatherly Report
with Chris
and Kyle,
a podcast about making music
and life.
Out of the monitors.
No, that's coming out of the headphones.
It's coming out of the headphones
that's
on the wall.
The headphones sitting on the wall.
Oh, stupid. What's up, man?
Nothing much, dude. It's been a while since it's just been me and you for a podcast.
It has been. We've been pretty busy with Weatherly lately.
It's funny. We've been really busy with Weatherly, but not together for the most part.
That's true. That's true. Well, we got story time. Story time was a blast. We haven't got to talk about that.
That's true.
So we'll get to that.
Story time was amazing.
Sandwich Stock was absolutely fantastic.
Fantastic.
I loved being able to help Dan out throughout the day.
And when we talk about both those things in depth, we also need to talk about the recording piece of both of those.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
So that's another thing we're going to go over as well.
Absolutely.
But let's talk, aside from the Weatherly performance stuff, what else has been going on?
I've been gigging again.
Yeah.
Which is weird. So me, I'm pretty open about sobriety. So I got to spend Halloween weekend night in Fells Point playing in a bar that was fucking packed full of drunk people.
Yes.
And I had a blast. I definitely had a blast. I definitely wanted to punch some drunk people.
Oh, yeah. You find out real how annoying they are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it was great. I played a gig at Cooper's in Fells Point with Mike Newberry. We did two, like, hour to hour and 10-minute sets. Some great music. We had so much fun with it. Really, it was nice because me and him kind of have the same dynamic. Not nearly as intense as it was when me and you first started playing again. But, like, just that level of trust when you're sitting next to another musician, that no matter what happens, no matter how bad one of us fucks up, it doesn't matter. We're still playing. We still keep up. We catch right away or make it sound like it was on purpose. And, like, there was some things that Mike did.
That's what me and you do most of the time. Yeah.
There was some things that Mike did that literally, I know he's probably going to listen to this, and I haven't talked to him about this, but there's some things that, like, really, I always had respect for him as a musician, but he's definitely kind of elevated. And especially his professionalism, like, and the way he interacts with crowds.
I'll tell you this. That is definitely one of his biggest assets. But I also will tell you this, and I'd be interested to get his take on this. But as a vocalist first, guitarist second, Mike's a little more break even on the vocalist versus guitarist because he's put a lot more into his guitar craft than I have. I can fully admit that. But I think he was a vocalist first.
Yeah, yeah. That's what
and he probably still considers himself that.
He was a vocalist in college.
Yeah. So
I think
it is a lot easier to feel free as a vocalist to really put your thought and heart into that part of the performance if you have another good musician next to you.
Yeah.
Because if you have somebody that's your level or below, you feel like you're carrying the whole performance, right?
Right.
When you have somebody that's better than you on an instrument level, as far as the performance goes, well, then my guitar is secondary to most of the time. It's going to be secondary. So I can, if I'm dividing attention levels between things mentally as I'm performing, I can lean more towards the vocal because worst cases, I flub a little bit of something here and most people don't notice. I'm wondering how he feels about that. Does he feel freer solo
or
with a group?
I'm sure when he's playing with some of the guys that he's been playing with for a while and that he gigs with regularly, I'm sure he's definitely that way with them. Both times that we've played, the music's still been fresh with me.
Yeah.
So I'm sure from a performance standpoint, he's still probably relying more on making sure that his guitar playing is accurate and a focal piece and just kind of having me reinforce it.
Yeah.
But definitely by our December 8th gig, I'll have everything in the bag to where I'll be able to sit back and just kind of take it over.
Yeah.
And let him like really go balls to the walls. Because I got to tell you, man, his range as a vocalist is fucking astronomical, dude.
Well, he grew up on that fucking Iron Maiden
shit. Hear this motherfucker sing Holy Diver.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is when you grow up on Maiden, you better have a high register.
But I mean, the shit he does, like we wound up doing Billie Jean twice. And we do a nice, cool little combo with loop. And I just kind of work my way in and out of the bass line and the auxiliary guitar slash keyboard parts.
Yeah.
And, but just the texture of his voice and the confidence and the style, like, it's just, I don't know. It's just one of those things, like, when I look at you and I'm like, wish I could fucking do that. Why can't I do that?
I'll
play Cliffs of Dover for both of you guys, but I can't do that.
Well, just know, we're looking at you playing Cliffs of Dover going, why can't I do that? I know the answer to why I can't do that, because I don't practice enough to do that. But that is my own doing.
Yeah.
But that said, it's really cool to see, and I haven't actually gotten out to see you guys yet, but it's really cool to have you out gigging, doing that stuff. I know it's a good muscle to work out, as I've said, but also it's promotion for us ultimately.
Yeah, absolutely.
But besides that, it's just you're happier when you're playing.
Yeah.
So
give a shout out to Mr. Brian Rumbley, who I'm playing in another band with.
Yes.
The Histrionics. With Dan from Musicland, Mike Newberry, and Brian Rumbley. And that was pretty cool. We put up that. He tagged Chris Mooneyhan from Weatherly. I appreciated that. But, I mean, I'm like a part of Histrionics as well. Right. But he plays with a band, Everwatt. But we went up and saw them at Tower.
Yep.
And, I mean, they're fucking solid. And Brian is just... Brian impresses me every time we play together. He is one hell of a bass player. And his backup vocals are just pristine. Like,
well, that was one
effortless
thing that stuck out to me when we saw him. It's just his backup vocals were on point.
Just effortless.
Like I said, I've only seen him one time, but he was a very creative bassist.
Yeah.
But within the confines, in a cover setting of not straying too far, but making it fun.
Yeah.
Not absolutely only for himself, probably, but also for the crowd. He strikes a good balance as a bassist. It's interesting to watch from a musician standpoint. Because from a musician standpoint, sometimes it's easy to lose interest in a cover band if you're not playing. Like, if you're at a venue, I'm like, okay, yeah, I know these songs, kind of thing. But if somebody's just throwing in enough flavor, especially a bassist doing that, that gets your attention every time.
So. Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Yep. All right, so there's that. My hand hurts. I feel like a bitch. My hand hurts like hell because I've literally been playing 5 to 6 hours a day for the last 6 days. We were supposed to have a gig on Friday, and I'm like, I got to finish learning all these songs.
Right.
And so I've been, like, just relentlessly practicing, and I'm definitely thankful to have a little bit of a night off tonight.
Yeah.
We didn't wind up rehearsing so we can record a podcast. And
it worked out,
gives
man.
Gives us more time for our next show, which is... I'm playing with Mike Newberry again on December 8th at Sunset Cove. And then I don't know when the next Histrionics show is. But we are going to come on a podcast.
Yes, we're going to have Histrionics here. It's going to be an interesting dynamic where
I'm
going
to be on that side of the table.
You are.
But there's no table.
You are co-host / interviewee.
No, I'm just interviewee, man. You're doing this one on your own.
Done. Done. I'm going to fuck with you.
So that's pretty good. We have some new additions as well.
Yeah.
For Weatherly that you have posted all over social media about.
Yes, yes, yes. We, Chris and I, started building some new furniture for the studio here. And,
Kyle made it glow.
I took what was already nice and pretty and added lights. But, yeah, we built up some stuff. It's really just a way to get the amps up off the floor, make them look a little more organized and not just stacks of amps up against a wall.
Although that looks cool as shit, too.
It but can.
In a studio setting, you want, especially a home studio, you want furniture. You don't want gear.
Right. Right. Exactly. That's kind of how I started feeling about it.
We've spoken. My Studio B is my freaking living room. My kid calls it his movie theater because it's furniture.
Yeah.
Everything's like built into the wall almost.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, that worked out really nicely. You know, we've got two separate pieces, and one of them also is housing all the rack gear in the studio. Now we added some rack rails and added a rack bay there. Got a little cubby for headphones and my other stuff.
Yeah, it's nice to clear up that whole side of the room, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now there's actually some light coming through here as well, which is nice. Yeah. I mounted some lights on the back of the desk, which is really cool. I like it. I like working in this lighting better at the computer.
Oh, I'm sure. It's less strenuous on your eyes.
Yeah, like I sit like this during the day most of the time when I'm working now as well, just because it's easier.
Fuck you.
I know.
It's been worse the last couple of weeks. Like, he gets to work from home and he calls me with new song ideas at like 12 o'clock in the afternoon while I'm driving around DC.
Well, they're just, you know, things come to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, it's day off. That's why I was sitting. I had a lot of brain time to just think, and that's where I was coming up with some stuff that I sent you today.
Yeah. We'll be getting back to working on a Weatherly's second album soon, probably within the next couple months. By the end of the year, we're going to be
so
in the writing process.
To that end, and then we can talk some more about other new stuff because there's more. But and we eventually got to talk about the shows as well. We need to get back to that. But I wanted to set us a challenge. I'm now getting in the spirit of certain challenges because of this other podcast that Chris and I both listen to. Shout out to the Simply Recording Podcast.
I will spot them all over the place, man.
Yeah.
And Joe are badasses, dude. I love them. They break recording and the home studio profession down to the smallest form and then just build it up piece by piece.
Well, the thing that the thing that I like that they do is they're showing what I think is a really important balance as a home studio person, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever term you want to use, engineer, producer, whatever.
Because of them, I actually don't like the term engineer.
I don't either.
I like to think that I am an audio specialist.
I like recording artist.
That one's good too.
Though that term used to be used for performers.
For performer, but back then performers were producing most of their own, so they definitely wore. I think performers back then, when it was referred to, it wore more hats than they do now.
Well, you know the actual.
You don't bring a Katy Perry into the studio without giving her the best freaking producer in the industry to actually handle all of her music.
Yeah, but I believe the impetus of the term, and I could be totally mistaken, and somebody, if I'm wrong, correct me, but was when recorded media first started coming around. If an artist got to the level that they had a record, they were now a recording artist. They were an artist that was being recorded.
Now it's easy for everybody to have a record.
Now it's easy for everybody to have, exactly. So
we have a record.
Yeah. So I think we're reappropriating the term is what we're doing. We're now using it for an audio professional in a studio environment. How's that?
Taking it back.
Yeah. Audio professionals, another one that I like. That's another term that I'm okay
with. I do like
audio
professional. It encompasses a lot.
At any rate, again, shout out to Joe and Graham, Simply Recording Podcast. Go listen to them if you're here for studio stuff. If that's what you're listening to us for, that's another place you need to go listen for information.
Yeah, they also do something that's really cool that me and you have already kind of issued to us at one point. But they have a website called Dueling Mixes.
Yes.
And they literally
need to subscribe.
Okay. They literally record these songs. They take turns recording a song, leaving it unmixed, unmastered, and they throw it up on the website.
Right.
And people download all of the directories and they mix and master it themselves, resubmit it, and then they all talk about it.
Yep.
And it's just a wonderful masterclass.
And the two guys that are running it, they each do a mix. And the users
get to vote
on which mix out of their two that
Graham's
they like.
Is usually better.
That's what they say. He's won the most anyway. Yeah. I've gone out there and listened to a good deal of what's out there on this that you can get to as a non-member, essentially. They're cool. So they do a lot of challenges. These guys like to do certain, but challenge themselves more than anything else. Because we're now in this in-between, we wrote a record, we've been working on a lot of other people's music, we've got a lot of other people's music to work on coming up here shortly. We could sparsely get in work on our new record in between those things and not put anything out till we're done. Or we could give ourselves a challenge, and that's by, let's decide on a date after I tell you, have a new single out by X date.
4 weeks. Write, record, produce, mix, master, and release in 4 weeks from the start date.
The only thing making me hesitant right now is that I'm going out of town for a week in November.
I mean, we could stagger. No, I don't want to do that. I was going to say we could stagger who's working on what, so I will focus on my guitar parts. Or we set it up because we already have one. So I just take that week while you're gone, and I hash out my guitar parts and any auxiliary stuff that we need to. Have it ready for vocals and whatever the fuck else you want to add to it after the fact. And then that gives you a week with it, and then we spend 2 weeks producing, mixing, and mastering. It's perfect.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about when to start it, because, or when to start the clock on it, because I'm out of town, and then we got Thanksgiving. And found out Lonnie's actually coming up to have Thanksgiving with us.
Really?
Yeah. He'll be here for about 3 days.
Well, then let's plan it then so he can record some shit and be on the single release.
Yeah.
That's Lonnie, a good plan. You hear that? You better be listening to this fucking podcast.
The motherfucker's driving to Orlando. Well, he's probably at a hotel in Orlando right now. He's driving down there for an interview. Mm. Anyway.
All right. So I like your challenge. I accept.
Okay. Let's pick a date by which it needs to be done. Considering those two obstacles of Thanksgiving in that week, I'd like to give it one more week than 4 weeks. I'd like to go 5 weeks.
That's fine.
Can we go 5 weeks?
That's fine. I don't care. You know I'm easy.
So, 5 weeks.
I just want to fucking record music.
We're not doing shit tomorrow. It's Halloween.
We're going trick-or-treating with the kids.
Well, I know. We're not doing shit musically. So excited. Yeah, the kids are stoked. They're ready to go. Yeah, 5 weeks from starting November 1st.
Perfect. All right, so let's get into back to our topics.
Yes.
And we could even fill music in.
Yeah.
Back into the... Right. All right, so...
Sorry.
Anyway. Story time.
Yes.
The last video that we put up on Facebook was story time.
Yeah. No, because we did Shoegaze Acoustic since then.
After, oh, we did, didn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, we did. We've done some stuff. We've gotten a few things out.
That's true. All right, so story time. Story time was probably the best that I've ever played in my life.
Because I know of one flub that I made, I'm not going to say that, but...
I had some flubs. It's okay to have some flubs.
Yeah, this particular one.
The intensity that we played was astonishing.
Yeah. We were...
It was a very emotional night for me.
We were very locked in. There's one particular thing we'll get to at the end of the story time commentary that I want to talk about with you. And the part of the night that was emotional for me because of you.
Oh, I know. Our listeners don't.
No. We'll get into that.
We have no problem getting personal with shit on this podcast.
Not at all.
You got to be open. That's the only way that you can be truly be a great musician is to be open.
Yeah.
All right, so your particular flub.
My particular flub is one
awesome night, and you're going to criticize it.
Well, here's the thing. I'm just giving this one caveat. The only thing is that one flub. It's one that I worked on getting rid of for a long time. Got rid of it. Haven't done it.
My ping in a new story.
Yes.
That's on the fucking album.
Yeah.
Pick it out. If you can pick it out, I'll buy you a coffee.
Okay. But at any rate, it's one that I worked on getting rid of, and it had not been there the last 30 times we played the song.
Yeah.
And it fucking came back at the wrong moment, and it made me mad for about 3 seconds of the night. Mad at myself. Anyway, that stated, it was the most locked-in performance I've ever been a part of. We were dead in sync. If anything wavered, it wavered with the emotion of the moment, and we both were in sync with that.
Yeah.
So.
It was just such a cool setting.
It was a great setting. It was a great setting. And we got to actually talk about what the songs were for, and we got to also explain that there are certain songs that I don't want to give you specifics on, because it would taint what it could be to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are certain songs on our record that I definitely feel that way about.
It's like Faded Blue.
I'm not so pretentious I feel that way about all of ours, right. But, you know,
Faded Blue
is one of those.
It all depends on what day it is.
Yeah, exactly.
It all depends on what day it is. Because the rain's going to fall no matter what.
Yeah. Faded Blue is a song written from the perspective of being in the low of a depression. I mean, that's all it is. And it's not this like...
But it's more of like, eh, fuck it. What can you do?
Exactly. It's literally like, it's a song about catching a case of the fuck it.
It's like, fuck this day sucks. I'm ready for tomorrow.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's the kind of song that is.
One of my favorite points of the night was being able to do Question the way that we put it on the album with Athena.
Yes.
Great shout out to Athena. You are a rock star. We love you. We can't wait to do some work with her. That's
absolutely
for sure.
And actually, we want to cut a new version of Question with her on
with
piano. Which we need to get that
her
together.
Adaptation of She's Been Seeing Me and Question. It's like, fuck. I mean, I think I'm a good composer. I write some good shit, but it's like Jesus, you know, that's the caliber that you strive to hit.
Here's the thing that happened, right? You took great composing and then gave it to a great pianist.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked at it from a pianist perspective, not a composer's perspective, and said, well, here, we'll just do these. Every pianist does their version of certain things.
Right.
Right. And that's all she did. She just threw Athena Flair on it, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
I loved it. Some of the choices of notes that she omitted was interesting, but it worked really well.
Yeah, that's because writing for MIDI, this is something that we'll have a whole podcast on this one.
Yeah.
I want to get somebody who's really good with MIDI composing in here when we do that. But writing for MIDI and writing for an actual acoustic instrument, two completely different things. Like, there were three spots in that song where, I mean, even after I ran it through GPO, after we released the album, because originally I think I did all that MIDI work on Logic.
Yes, you did.
Now we have Garrett and Personal Orchestra 5.
Yep.
That has great sounding pianos and I mean, with velocity-sensitive keys, you can map that shit out, and it sounds amazing. But even when I ran the piano part through there, there were still some elements missing. That might be because of the where our voices fall with each other as far as the range in that song. Could be a ton of factors. But I had to add a couple doubled notes in order to get the fullness.
Yeah.
And then, but some of the choices that I made to keep it on that... what we call Southern Rock Les Mis, to keep that Les Mis side and not just hit octaves, I was doubling the sixth in the bass in some spots or doubling the seventh. And some of those chords are not playable.
Yeah.
You don't have that many fingers. I mean, you can be a dick and like go down and hit it with your nose or something like that, but...
Yeah, I do remember Athena looking at you going, this is the chord, and she's stretching her hands in ways that aren't natural.
She moved her left hand twice.
Yeah, this is the chord you're telling me to play here, just so you know. And I remember the look on your face, you're like, yeah, fuck. All right. Fair point. But yeah, no, that was amazing getting to do it like that. And some of the best feedback we got and the most feedback we got was on that song from that night, from the people that were there.
Yeah.
You know,
our harmonies were great. They were confident.
Harmonies were fucking amazing. Loved it.
Very happy with that.
It was everything I want a Weatherly acoustic duo performance to be. That's the way every one of them should be.
Yeah, it was great. We had both of our parents there.
Yeah, that was
my
awesome.
Mom and
the moms were there.
And your mom was there.
Yeah. Yeah, my mom happened to be in town down from from Georgia. So, yeah, it was awesome to have my mom has not seen me play live in least 7 years, somewhere around there, 6 or 7 years at least. It's just I'm up here, she's down there kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
But it was pretty great to have them there. It was a great night. It was a really great night.
Yeah.
So I'm going to state this, and then we're going to move past it and come back to it. Mike McCann from Raventree was another performer that night. And
that dude's awesome, man.
About all the performers. We'll go through that.
I had so much fun sitting down talking with him.
He's a compelling guy to talk to.
He really is.
I've had a few conversations with him over the years. He didn't remember this particular thing, but we did play with Raventree at the circuit a long time ago. My old band. And then he was at the first Normandy Wood show I played, and he and I talked after that show.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, sprinkled in here or there, I've seen him around, but bigger conversations that we've had. He's just a compelling dude to talk to. He's got very strong, but very rational, reasonable opinions.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And he doesn't excuse himself from those, but he also doesn't rub them in your face. He's just a genuine dude. You know, he's kind of like a this is me guy. But anyway, mm-hmm. enough about that. Mike took some audio from that show. He had a...
Yeah, I think it was like a Zoom little stereo handheld recorder.
Yeah, Zoom H4, whatever
that is. Had little XY mics on the end of it or something like that.
And he basically had that set in the back of the room, kind of back by the soundboard.
I don't know.
So
it was sitting wherever him and Julia were sitting.
Gotcha. Well, that was dead front, about three rows back, I believe, is where they were. But anyway, he gave us the audio from that for all the performances.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that to work on mixing two channels of audio and mastering to send out to everybody to see what we can get performance-wise out of that, see if there's anything worth salvaging.
It doesn't sound bad, but, I mean, you're just picking up the room. That's
right.
All you're doing.
Right.
So there's only so much editing or cleaning up that you can do.
Yep. So we're still finalizing that and going to try to get that out to everybody. And
mm-hmm.
what they do with it, it's up to them, obviously. But it's not the clearest audio just because of the perspective of where the microphone was
mm-hmm.
and the room. If you had the ability to take, you know, a stereo thing off the board plus have a room, you might have had something to really work with there. But so that's one small audio project we have on our plate. You finished up one from
Sandwich Stock.
Sandwich Stock.
I just took a stereo out of the PA.
Yeah.
And ran it into our board and just recorded two channels of everything. Or just recorded a stereo channel of everything. And it came out great. But I mean it's taking raw sound. I mean, it's just dynamic mics or DIs that are plugged right into the PA that are just coming right into our board. So the only audience that you hear is through the vocal mic. And it's so like really faint in the background. But as far as the clarity, I mean, just getting them into getting them into Reaper, and then I put a stereo widener on it and just kind of widen out the upper mids a little bit and mm-hmm. a little bit of the low end, and through made the like a 2 dB boost on both the channels just to bring the vocals out a little bit more present
right
in the upper range. And then I threw a maximizer across it. That's it.
With live audio, it's almost the best thing I find to do is...
I didn't put a compression on it at all.
Yeah, it's just a maximizer. That's what I used to do. I'd throw like a Waves L3 at it.
Yeah.
And yeah, the L3 Ultramizer or whatever it's called.
Yeah. So that was good. But we're jumping around, man.
Yes, we are.
We
but
haven't
I figured
done this in a while.
We stopped on audio. We're talking about audio. Now we're going to come back. So here's the thing. Between the two gigs, we got to play with a lot of great performers.
Yeah.
I had a plan. I was going to group it.
All right.
Between the gigs, we got to play with a lot of great acts. A lot of great acts. If I was try to run down the list, Jesus, from Storytime, we had Mike McCann,
mm-hmm.
The Chief End, Us, and...
Goodbye July.
Goodbye July. There you go.
Patrick Size, who's also in Schizocalypso.
Yes, 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 yes. Actually, it was really great to see, because that's the first time I've got to see Patrick play.
Yeah, but he plays bass.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's a hell of a guitarist.
Yeah.
He's a good bass player.
Yeah. First time I got to see him play bass, but he was excellent.
Yeah.
Good harmonies, too. Real good harmonies from him. And then with Sandwich Stock, good Lord, long list.
Sandwich Stock was just fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, it started
it
out great with
day.
the teacher's jazz band thing at the front, which was awesome to hear.
Yeah, those were really good.
Wish there'd been a little more foot traffic at the start to hear that. Would have been cool.
Well, they were supposed to play right before us.
Yeah.
Later in the afternoon, where there was a good amount of people, but there was a lot of them, because they're all teachers, a lot of them also play in other orchestras, and they all had half of them had a really big recital that night. So Dan just had to put them on first.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But they were absolutely great.
Yep.
And then who went on after them? Brian.
Yeah, Brian. And then we had
that dude. I love listening to him, man. He just plays with so much energy. It's just so.
He is.
You listen to the previous podcast. We talk all about him.
Yes. Yeah, we did actually go through that on the previous podcast. And then Shane Doherty.
Yeah.
Was next.
Yeah. I'm
trying to get in touch with him actually because I found out like the guitar that he played was one that he makes or had made or something. He has some sort of company that he's working with. And he posted online today the thing about the jumbos.
The jumbos, yeah.
I need to know how to get a hold of one of those jumbos.
I got it, man. I thought I was the one with the addiction.
Yeah. Gear acquisition syndrome, my friend.
I'm sure they have a meeting. Right? I'm sure we have a meeting.
There's several online forums dedicated to it.
There we go.
But anyway, so yeah, he was great. Yeah. Very solid, solid season performer. Mm-hmm. Great tone. I loved his set. Then Dana. Dana was next.
Dana
Dead Pens.
Dead Pens.
Great.
Her recording came out the best, especially the stuff that she's doing on piano.
Yeah.
It's just so much power. She actually made a comment to me after I sent it to her. She was like, oh, my God, it sounds like I'm on a live radio show. This is awesome. And it really does. Like, it has that legitimate, like, old-time, just really good recording radio-type deal.
It's dynamic mics through a mixer, man. That's what, you know, that's, yeah, what else can you get?
It was great. But doing things like that, it just tells me that, you know, from a sound engineer's perspective, if you can take a stereo out of the board and have a good recording quality, then you know you're mixing well.
Yeah. It is a good sanity check.
In that small setting.
Yeah.
When you're in, like, a Brass Monkey with a full band or something like that, then no, because you're not going to really mic toms or mic, I don't know, half the time I didn't even freaking run DI or run basses through the board.
No.
I'm like, you're fine. Angle your freaking bass cab that way and turn it up a hair.
There you go.
I'll tell you if you're too loud. So then we had Cecilia Grace.
Yes, fantastic.
I absolutely love them. They're fun. They're just they work so well together.
The reason I
mean,
listening to them,
you can tell they're sisters.
Yeah, you can.
They just
absolutely
have fun together on stage.
The thing that I love most about them is their harmonies.
Yeah.
I mean, I could sit and listen to harmony all day long.
Yeah.
They were amazing for that. You know, it's a sweet spot of mine just from my background vocally, but I loved it.
Obviously.
Yeah. So they were fantastic. And then Lander.
Yeah. Well, Tim Kay.
Tim Kay. Yeah. He was before Dana, actually.
Yeah.
He was on before Dana. Very fun performer. Got a lot of energy.
He's a hell of a pianist.
Very good pianist. He had some Randy Newman qualities.
Yeah.
He had some...
A lot of Billy Joel.
Of Billy Joel qualities. You know, it was an interesting amalgamation of some apparent influences. Mm-hmm. But I'd actually like to ask him what he really listens to, like what his influences are, what he considers his influences, because I was hearing some very specific things, but I was curious.
Get a little show tunes in there.
Yep.
Definitely.
So
Lander.
Yeah, Lander.
Matt, thank you for the shout-out yesterday. We love you, man. We always talk about you guys on the podcast.
Yeah, Lander was fantastic.
They are exactly what I wanted to be in college as a musician, where I had the capacity to be that close with a group of people and just all get on the same plane when playing music and just fucking ride the wave.
Yeah.
And it always just led to something amazing. Now, I will say my favorite thing that they do, although their performance was amazing and they do some great, like, little practice room videos and stuff like that. Their acoustic sets are great. But the thing that I love the most that they do are these truck sessions that they do almost every week.
Yeah, I've seen a few of them now.
And they're literally just driving down the road, and whoever's not driving is either playing a lute, a mandolin, a ukulele, a banjo, a acoustic.
A Martin backpacker that he got from Music Land. I saw that shout out.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, they're, like I said, they're great. The thing that struck me and what I approached Matt about after their set was just his guitar tone. It is sick. Mm. It is everything that I want my channel to yeah. to be, essentially. My channel 2 with the boost off, that's what it should sound like. It should sound like Matt Graff, essentially. I mean, that's what it should sound like.
Makes sense.
It was amazing. Loved his sound. My yeah. Fender bassman was blazing. Loved
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll have them on the podcast pretty soon.
Yes, most definitely.
With them in the next
We're going to get a performance out of them on the podcast.
Oh, that would be fun.
We should do that.
That would be fun.
Tell them to do a truck session in studio or something.
Absolutely. We'll figure, you know. Shit, I'll take some gear outside and we'll do it on the truck.
Yeah, there we go. We'll invite the neighbors out.
And then to close out the night, Dan and Think Again.
Yes, Dan and Think Again, though they couldn't see shit.
Yeah, that's true.
It got dark a little faster than everybody anticipated.
Yeah.
But great set. Great set.
They have so much energy.
And they're musically so tight. That's the thing that is... They are glued together.
Very much so.
It is very apparent that they put in the time individually and together to know those songs inside mm-hmm. and out. Joe on bass is Joe's solid no matter where you stick Joe.
I might have a secret man crush on Joe. He's just that kind of dude. Like, it's like, I just want to be your friend. All right. We're friends.
Joe's,
I like it.
Joe's
Joe will be
guy.
On the podcast soon as well. I've said this multiple times. I'm going to bring a book because you two fuckers are going to be nerding out the whole night on gear. I'm just going to read. I'll work on Hysteronics' set list.
Like I said, Joe is just one of those guys that every time I've seen him, whatever setting I've seen him in, guitar, bass, doesn't matter. Fucking solid.
Just solid. Yeah.
Backup vocals, solid.
Right.
There's nothing the fucker can't do. And it kind of irritates me that he's that good. But anyway.
He's one of them that play in like, what was he in, like 4 different groups?
Over the course of time I've known him, I think he's probably gone through 7 or 8 different yeah. things that he's been involved in. But
he's very versatile.
But yeah, I think he's in 3 now. I think he said he was only in 3 things right now.
Yeah, so the day was really successful. Band together was able to raise a substantial amount of money.
Absolutely.
Which is absolutely amazing.
So
had quite a few instruments dropped off for the
Yeah,
for
I saw
that.
I think
I
check
saw like
for
2 or 3.
Like $1,600 or something or whatever it was. Yeah, no, it was great.
Yeah, and freaking Vagabonds is amazing.
Vagabonds is great. I mean, the way they support music in this little community is amazing.
Absolutely.
So yeah, big shout out to those guys. So here's my question to pose to you, and this is not to diminish any of the other people that we are, any of the acts that we have talked about, but if you had to pick out a standout performance from one of the groups that we played with, like what's the one that is still in your brain?
Dana. Her original Unaddressed. Dude, I have it in Dropbox. I cannot stop listening to it.
It's a great song.
It's so emotional. The power in her voice, the way that she utilizes inflections, she does it every time flawlessly. No matter whether it's live, no matter whether it's sitting in doing a Facebook video.
Yep.
Like she just knows whether she's even doing it on purpose. Who knows? She just naturally knows when to put either a little extra or take a little off. And it's just. I don't know. I think she gave a flawless freaking performance.
Nice. So if I had to go overall, group for group, blah, 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 I would most likely go Dana as well. But that said, there was one performance that was a standout for me because of one performer in the act that was performing. If you had to think of who that might be. The drummer.
We need to find you. We gotta find you. I hope you're listening to this.
The drummer from the Chief End. That
sitting
kid
on a cajon
was sick
with a snare. No, he didn't have a snare.
No, I mean...
He had, well, the snare on the cajon.
The snare of the cajon. He had a bass pedal.
A bass pedal and a hi-hat.
Yeah, bass pedal and a hi-hat. And he had like a little cymbal off the top. I forgot what else he had. But that guy was fucking sick.
Yeah.
I don't remember his name right off the top of my mind at the moment. I probably should have looked at that before we started. But that said, fucking A, that kid was great.
Yeah. Now, them as a whole, the harmonies that they did between all four of them... They were creative. They were so creative.
They were super creative. Well, here's the thing. Everybody in that band was good. The lead guitarist guy on the end was closest to us.
The electric guitar.
Really good. Great tone. Great choices.
Knew how to balance very well.
Yes.
He was constantly adjusting from song to song.
Yep.
So that way he wasn't, because I mean, you have a drummer sitting on a cajon. You have a bass player. Was he on an acoustic bass? No, he was on an electric bass.
Mm-hmm.
But then... two acoustic guitarists as well in an acoustic setting. And I think, like, I mean, back in...
Those fuckers brought a fireplace.
They did. And they were drinking apple juice like it was whiskey, like it was scotch.
Or cider. Could or be cider. Or whatever. I don't
know.
Who knows?
I don't know. They lit a candle.
Yeah, they lit fucking candles. I was like, God damn it, why didn't we think of that?
I know. We bring our stools.
Yeah. We brought stools, yeah.
We always bring stools.
But anyway...
People love that we bring stools because they wind up sitting on our stools.
Everybody does. Yeah, they're great fucking stools for guitar.
But yes, I agree. They were definitely up there. Him especially.
Yeah. That kid was sick.
We will be finding him. We are going to stalk the shit out of him.
Yeah, because he's going to do some work with us.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Especially with the new record, with the material we're going to write for the new record, acoustic videos with him helping us on it are going to be amazing.
Yeah, I think it would definitely benefit. Everybody.
Yeah.
Benefit be cool. Everybody. Yeah, but so overall...
So dude, whose name I'm going to look up right after I finish this, if you're listening, fucking get in touch with us.
Yes. We'll
Or we will be in touch with you shortly.
When we find you, we are literally just going to say, listen to our goddamn podcast.
Yeah.
So listen to the podcast and you'll be completely filled in.
Yes. We'll give you a timestamp or something of when this is.
Fuck that. Listen to all of our podcasts. Well, it's good material in here.
We got to hook them first.
We do. That's anyway. True. I'm in a little bit of a dilemma.
And what is that?
All of my new podcasts have, like, synced up.
Yeah.
It's pissing me off. They're all released on Wednesday every other week.
Yeah.
So literally from Thursday for 2 weeks until Tuesday, I have nothing to listen to.
See, I've got podcasts stacked up right now because I've been listening to a couple of audiobooks.
Yeah.
So I got a lot of catching up to do on several of them.
Yeah. So overall, great things with music, great things with performance. We had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah.
I think we're in the process of figuring out what's next for Weatherly.
Well, we know we have a few things right in front of us, right? We've got the Deadpans that we're working with.
Yep. Mike Newberry will be finishing up his stuff that we're going to finish mixing and mastering.
Yep. And I honestly think we need to just go ahead and what he's already finalized in there, just do.
Yeah.
And when he sends us that last track, maybe it comes out a little bit differently.
Yeah. That'll help too, because one of the things is that with Histrionics is we play a lot of Mike Newberry originals. I think we have 4 of the songs that we play.
Oh, cool.
Throughout our set, which is great.
Are you doing My Hill?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Now I have to come see you guys soon.
And Mike also branched out and was like, hey, we'll learn some Weatherly songs. Like, sweet.
Yeah. Fuck it.
I want to play these two with a full band.
Which two?
My solos sound better.
Which two?
Faded Blue.
Okay.
That chorus, especially at the end, like Foo Fighters big.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of guitars.
It is.
And I want to do Shoegaze, because I want to do the guitar split with 2 guitars at the end.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
My journey moment. It'll fit very well with the set.
Hell yeah. Knock it out, man.
Even though we're not playing any Journey.
That can be a good or bad thing.
I know.
Depends.
That's true.
Depends.
I don't know. Mike's got the range, man.
Oh, no. Now, Mike can sing the fucking phone book. I'm not worried about Mike
Jesus. On
anything. The dude's got range. Man. Range for days. Yeah, it's rare when I get vocal tracks that I had nothing to do with being part of when they were performed, coaching-wise, and I don't have many critiques at all. He makes smart choices vocally.
Very much so.
So, and he's a vocalist who knows his instrument. He knows what it can and can't do, what it sounds good doing, and what it doesn't sound good doing.
What I appreciate the most out of that is back to that whole adaptation thing. Mm-hmm. When he's doing regular gigs and doing acoustic sets, he does everything a half step down.
Yeah.
But then a lot of the same songs in the full band setting is in standard tuning, is back up. And he still fucking nails them. Like, they're, I mean, just completely on point.
Nice.
Something new I want to start doing.
Yes.
Is because we are both ridiculous nerds when it comes to audio recording and being audio professionals.
There you go.
Or recording artists.
Whatever you want to call it.
Most important thing that you have discovered in setting up a new studio setting in your house compared to your old one. The most important thing that you did differently this time that you're glad that you did.
Can go one of two things. I will probably go with the fact that I treated this room off the bat. I pulled down, because my acoustic treatment's mobile. It doesn't, mm-hmm. It's not stuck to the walls or anything. It's hung, it's framed treatment. Being able to come in here and treat the room immediately, and I didn't do one thing on the system. I didn't try to tune in my monitors, nothing, until I had sat those in here with a peak noise running, walked around this room, found the spots that I needed to treat properly, found where the bass was going to be weird. You know, the reason you're sitting next to a giant bass trap over there.
That's my box that I set my drink on.
Yeah. You know, figured out where I was going to place the couch in the room based on some mm-hmm. of that. You know, I had a plan. It ended up going kind of where I wanted it. But just figuring that out off the bat before I ever did anything and not experiencing the frustration of the room causing it to mistranslate what I'm trying to do mixing-wise mm-hmm. was really gratifying because I did it right. Now, we both know the one thing that I still have in this room is a little bit of a pronounced lows that are... I'll say there's a lack of low end in this room now.
I don't think a lack of low end. I just think it moves around too much.
Yeah. So adding a sub is one of the primary things that we're looking at doing mm-hmm. In here. But that said, I think treating the room off the bat was the biggest win when I moved in
it's
here.
It's been a common theme of discussion with some people that I've met over the last couple weeks,
yeah,
who asked me about buying like expensive gear and they're going to upgrade their monitors because just what they're doing doesn't sound right. And I'm like, what do you got on your walls? And they're like, picture frames. And what do you mean? I was like, you don't have any treatment? And like, no. I'm like, here.
Yeah.
This is what you need to do generally. Figure out what works for you. Figure out what sounds best. Yeah. But it doesn't matter what gear you have. If your room's not treated, you're just fighting yourself.
Yeah. Absolutely. And here's the thing. I am not an acoustical engineer. That is a bright term for those folks. But there are a few simple steps you can do to keep yourself from just fighting your room all the time. It's not going to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn your room and learn your monitors and do all those things. You know, a perfect mixing environment in a home studio is a non-existent pursuit. You shouldn't go there. But getting some broadband absorption up, putting a little bit of treatment behind your monitors, getting a little bit of diffusion set up on your back wall. You know, initially I just used a bookcase full of books. That was my big diffuser. You know, now I've started adding some spot diffusers just recently, along with the furniture that we built. But having those things set up off the bat, and it just saves you miles.
Yeah.
because you're not fighting the reverberations of the room. You're not fighting reflections. You know, read a book. It'll tell you there's reflection points. You can measure. You can do certain things.
Well, we've talked about this in a previous podcast when we were recording Walk With Me, and I recorded my electric guitar part. I actually mic'd my Blackstar ID Core 20
right
when I ran my delay through it and ran two mics, one on each speaker. And the biggest problem that I had was I live in an apartment with a really long tunnel behind me and a very long living room. So I got a lot of room behind me and no treatment back there whatsoever.
Right.
And when I recorded my guitar part, and then I sent it to you without even listening to it back. Like, I was like, that was a great take. Render, Dropbox, Kyle, it's there. You called me. You're like, I'm not putting this on the album. I'm like, why? You're like, you listened to this and you sent it back to me. And I'm like, that's not at all how it sounded when I recorded it.
Yeah.
But I didn't listen back how many times my delay was pinging off of walls and coming back and being picked up by the mic.
Yeah.
Like, I usually do, like, a dotted eighth offset of my delay. That was, shit was, like, in some random triplets and polymeter. I don't even know what it was.
It was doing some weird shit.
That was a 30 seconds to Mars. It's,
yeah.
It's going there and coming back and doing whatever the hell it wants to in between.
Yeah, it was pretty wacky. Yeah. But you've done a lot of treating of your place since
then. I've toned it down quite a bit.
Yeah.
I've definitely toned it down quite a bit. I'm getting proficient enough results.
Yeah.
I'm happy with the results. Could still be better. But taking my time and working on it slowly to make sure that I'm treating it correctly.
Yep.
As opposed to over-treating it and killing all of the sound.
Yep. And, like, the treating that I'm doing now is really treating
specifics.
It's specifics. Because it's things that I noticed that I was having to compensate for
yeah.
while mixing, doing our record and the other record that we just did.
Mm-hmm.
So
Life of the Funeral.
Life of the Funeral.
They will be
Jesus.
Releasing
Sorry, it is
very
not
soon.
In my brain at the moment. Yes, they are releasing their music very soon. That'll be out there for everybody to hear, and we'll throw links up as soon as that happens. But there's a couple things where I think some of the low end, me trying to over push the low end, was because of some of the slapback stuff that I was getting off mm-hmm. the back wall. Didn't have enough diffusion back there, I don't think. So we're adding a little bit.
Right.
Adding it up higher on the wall so that maybe it'll catch more of that because there's a lot of low diffusion.
Yeah, I mean, it'll also help the way that being elevated up a little bit higher because you have acoustical drop ceiling
right.
in here, let it kind of diffuse it. And because, I mean, it's not really – I don't really like the term diffusers because it's not so much diffusing it. It's just dispersing it but in small spaces and uneven spaces.
Correct.
So it's just kind of like a paint splatter almost – as opposed to just letting the paint fly through the air
right.
and get caught.
Right.
And so I definitely think it's help kind of it's gonna help reflect it a little bit up towards the acoustic ceiling tiles.
Yep.
And flatten it out a little bit.
Yep.
So it could definitely help.
Yep. I think that and eventually adding a sub in here, I will be as happy as I'm gonna be in this space acoustically.
Yeah.
So
that'll be all good things.
Yeah, man.
All good things.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. All right, brother.
Let's close it out, man. I have doing this last little question thing. We'll make it a segment. We'll find a name for it.
I've already got it mapped out.
Okay.
That's why I clapped.
Good.
It
okay.
get cut there. Well, now I got to leave it because I mentioned in the podcast. That's all right. It's the first time we do it.
Yeah.
I've been pitching to you for ages. I want to do segments.
Put it in there anyway, so it's really funny that
it's
we talk
be.
About it afterwards.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Why the hell not? We
anyway.
Love you guys. It's not like y'all are fucking paying attention
nope.
anyway.
So you guys can look forward to this. End of every podcast, we're going to do one of us will do a question to the other about something specific audio engineering wise.
And if you have any questions, feel free to let us know.
Yep, and we'll both answer. If it comes from the listeners, we'll both answer.
Sounds good to me.
Cool. Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Keep making music.
So the best feeling in the world is when you're sitting on stage and you look down and you just have a beautifully clean pedal board. All your cables are nicely coiled, not in tangles or strung all over the place, and they stay that way. So I've really got to give it up to Pig Hall cables. I used all Pig Hall cables at this show on this past Saturday, and it was just perfect.
Pig Hall cables are amazing. I mean, we're using them in the studio right now. I have them patched in all over through my rack gear. They're just amazing cables.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another amazing company that I've been... Actually, I just changed the strings that I use with that company. Kurt Mangan strings. So I actually just took my 335 up to Musicland. Have Jerry take a look at it.
Yeah, right here in Bel Air, Maryland.
Yep, and I'm just moving gauge up from 10 to 11 with the Kurt Mangans. Wanted to go with something a little bit beefier on the hollow bodies.
And a guitar like a 335, you should definitely take it to an excellent luthier when you're going to up your string gauge.
Absolutely. So I'm actually anxious to get it back, feel how the 11s feel on it, because it's going to be great. They're Kurt Mangans. They're solid strings that are never going to let you down. They last for longer than anything else I play that's out there. So, big shout out to Kurt Mangan and Musicland.
All right, guys. Well, please like and subscribe. And we are going to be setting up a Patreon page very soon so we can keep doing this. And we love you. Send us money. Reach out to us at the Weatherly Report at AOL.com and look at all things Weatherly on YouTube.